The Geek Cave, brought to you by BuzzTime. Great minds drink alike. Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today. And GameStop, power to the players. Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another exciting edition of the Geek Cave Comics Podcast. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad.
And like you said, this is the comic book segment, my personal favorite, but, you know, that's just me. And as always, it is brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today, BuzzTime, Great Minds Drink Alike, and GameStop, power to the players. Boys, it is the comic book segment. Regale me with comic book news.
No.
New things have been published.
Thank you. Okay, well, see you next month, folks. Darren, do you have any news?
I do. Action Comics 1000 is out.
Mm-hmm. Red undies and all.
Red undies and all. Although Action Comics 1000 doesn't really explain why the red undies. You're going to need to buy Brian Michael Bendis' new miniseries to find out.
Please tell me it's the Return of the Undies. Please tell me that's the name of the title.
It's called Man of Steel.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah, but basically Action Comics 1000 is a collection of short stories by a number of artists and writers who have worked with the franchise, just kind of telling their own little short stories. Some are kind of cute, some are kind of stupid. One has Vandal Savage trapping Superman at the dawn of like the 1930s, and he has to fight his way back as all his different incarnations. The best one is also probably the saddest one. It takes place like 5 million years in the future. And Superman has revisited Earth for the last time right before the sun goes supernova. He's already got everyone off Earth. Everyone's living somewhere else. He gave Lois like an immortality potion that tastes like grape soda. It's a nice little bit of extra dialogue there. But He comes back just to say goodbye to his parents' grave. And thank them for like the lessons that he's learned and all that stuff. It's kind of a sweet, saccharine moment. But for the most part, it's just a celebration of Superman. And if you liked Superman, it's a good read. You do get about 4 pages of Bendis' new Superman story. He gets immediately clobbered by this giant gray monster dude that's not named Doomsday.
Cool.
And the preview ends with Superman being stabbed through the heart and dying. So, yay. Can only look up from here.
Woohoo.
Now, that being said, we would like to thank DC Comics. We would like to thank DC Comics for sending us the... this is separate. It's Action Comics 1000, 80 years in the making. It's a hardcover. Collects some of Superman's biggest moments over the 80 publication years. And we are going to have these for this book for our Extra Life marathon coming up Labor Day weekend. It's going to be one of the prizes for our donors, which, by the way, if you go to geekcavepodcast.com/extralife2018, you'll find the donation page and all that great stuff. The only other bit of comic news that I have is that we will finally soon get an answer to There Are 3 Jokers.
Oh.
DC kind of teased this at the end of the New 52 when Batman got a hold of a Mobius chair. And then after that, we haven't really had anything come about. Well, after whatever happens in the issue of Batman in June, where Bruce and Selina get married, and, you know, with it being a comic book, that's not going to go smoothly at all. The Joker plans on crashing the wedding, and apparently right after that, we finally jump headfirst into the Three Jokers storyline. And we'll finally find out, have there actually been 3 of him running around the DC universe?
All right.
So
what, looking for that in July?
Yeah. Look for that in July. Other than that, I don't really have a whole lot else. Of course, you can go to geekcavepodcast.com. Look at the tags at the bottom of our stories. See one that says comics. Click on it, and that'll take you to all of our comic book content right there.
Okay. Chad, do you have anything?
Nope.
Okay, right. Then.
I have as much to offer as you do in a typical gaming segment.
Which, that's fair. That's fair. All right, so I guess without further ado, we'll move on to the long box. Hit it, Kent!
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Prepare yourself for Justin's long box. Yeah, baby. Extra long.
Okay, well, boys, I have a bit of sad news. For those of you who don't know, and this is like the public service announcement portion of the long box. Happy Harvest canned spinach has been recalled due to a peanut allergen from mislabeling. It's sad, but you know, I want everyone out there to be safe. So if you have Happy Harvest canned spinach, please, you know, don't use it.
What does this have to do with comics?
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
Gosh. To help brighten up this very sad day, I'm going to talk about Popeye.
There it is.
Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Popeye, he's a cartoon character. You can't do that. Bullshit. He started off in a comic strip in the newspapers, which is a precursor to comic books. Ergo, he goes in the long box.
There you go.
So, yes. Popeye.
Whoa!
And so on.
And so on. He was created by L.Z. Seeger, and he first appeared in King Features Comics' Thimble Theater on January 17th, 1929. Popeye has been around since 1929, y'all. Later becoming the title character in later years. In about 2002, TV Guide ranked him as number 20 of the top 50 greatest cartoon characters of all time. So he's had a pretty big impact. Depending on the medium, there are differences in the character. He originally got his strength from rubbing the head of the Wiffle Hen. I don't know what a Wiffle Hen is. Just don't
I'm
ask.
Just going with it.
Yeah. Go with it, because I don't know how to explain what a Wiffle Hen is. I imagine a wiffle ball and a chicken got it on, and poof.
It's very hard for them to hatch the eggs because they have holes all along the one side.
I know, so it's rare. It's the rare Wiffle Hen. About 1932, it changed to spinach, so, you know. He's generally depicted as bereft of manners and uneducated, yet can come up with solutions to problems that seem insurmountable, at times displaying almost Sherlock Holmes-like intuition. You know, he sees footprints on the ground. Oh, obviously, Olive has been captured.
Obviously.
Sounds like an 80s Turtles episode.
Yes.
First, let's go save April!
Popeye's trademark pipe is kind of an all-purpose tool. It has been not the least of which, a blowtorch, a jet engine, a propeller, a periscope, a musical instrument, and the whistle for his trademark. He can also use it to eat his spinach and can. He can actually suck the entire can of spinach into the pipe, a corn cob pipe looking kind of thing, by the way, and never spit out the can. So he eats the aluminum as well. So it's a lot of suction, high in iron, you know. When Thimble Theater first started in 1919, one of the original characters was Olive Oil. Her boyfriend, Harold Hamgravy, don't ask, and Olive's brother, Castor. Castor Oil, there it is, yeah. Popeye was a minor character when he debuted. hired by Castor to pilot a ship to Dice Island, where he was going to use the luck of the Wiffle Hen to break the bank of the casino. Upon leaving, the casino figured out what had happened, and they gave chase, shooting Popeye a lot of times. Like, you know, full Swiss cheesed him. Only by rubbing the Wiffle Hen did he survive. Yeah. This was apparently enough to spark huge interest in the character. Don't ask. But he became so popular that they brought him back as a central character, which led the strip to be featured in more newspapers across the country. Eventually, Olive left Ham Gravy for Popeye, but she's been fickle with him. You know, you're my boyfriend. Maybe. This is fun. In 1933, he received a baby in the mail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Sweet Pea.
Is that how Columbia House got started?
Whoa, man. I'm not ready for that kind of commitment. Yeah, no one, it's never been described who Sweet Pea's parents are. He showed up at Popeye's doorstep in a box. Good for him. Other characters introduced around this time are J. Wellington Wimpy, a hamburger-loving mooch whose tagline is, "I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today." Yeah.
It's one of the most popular lines in Popeye.
Yeah. Wimpy really serves no purpose other than comic foil. Just throwing that out there. The strips were a lot different from the cartoons that were to follow. Spinach was rarely used, and Bluto, the main antagonist, only appeared once in the comic strips in the early days. It was just kind of there. By 1938, now, Popeye first appeared in, 1929? Yeah. By 1938, the strip was now appearing in 500 different newspapers, and Popeye himself had 600 licensed products. Now, think about this. It's 1938. What in the hell could they license a product out of Popeye? Yeah. And yet there were 600 different licensed products out there. So good for him. Interesting note. After Mussolini took power in Italy, he banned American comic strips. Popeye was so popular, the Italians made him bring it back. I'm going to say that again. The Italian people in the late 1930s, early 40s, made Mussolini do something that he didn't want to do. That's how popular Popeye is, folks.
Well, eventually they got him to hang by the neck from a building.
Eventually, yes.
Bet he didn't want to do that either.
That's true. Okay, so twice it's happened. But I guarantee you, after that second one, it never happened again.
Everybody's got their limits.
Everybody's got their limits, yeah.
Pasta!
As the decades went on and comic books became a thing, a number of different publishers made Popeye comics, including King's Comics, Golden Key, and Dell Comics. And in the Dell Comics, he was featured more as a private eye. Similar Popeye characteristics, but, you know, gumshoe.
I'm just imagining.
Just imagining, yeah.
Trading out the pipe for a cigar. You know. Trading out the sailor hat for a...
A fedora.
For a fedora. Or a Panama. You know, the sailor shirt for, like, a suit... You know, he just watched too many Sam Spade movies. And...
But from the elbows down, it's still cut out for his massive forearms.
But he still has cuffs.
Yes.
So he has cuffs and sleeves that go down to his elbows.
Oh,
like
yes.
If they animated it, it would show him putting on a regular jacket. But then when he goes to button the jacket, like it rips the forearms out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he just has like 16, 17 of these jackets.
Oh. In 2012.
I need to bring these to the cleaners again, huh?
In 2012, IDW released an original 12-part miniseries, and later that year they also reprinted original strips from the 1940s and 50s. So you can still get some of these if you look. cartoons were also created. The Fleischer Studios started releasing the Popeye shorts in 1933. Eventually, Paramount bought the studio and but continued to use those and make Popeye. In fact, Popeye was in their rotation of pre-movie shorts for 25 years.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Popeye. That's a heck of a catalog.
Yeah. In 2001, Cartoon Network, under the supervision of animation historian Jerry Beck, put together a new Popeye show that featured these old shorts. And this was kind of a task in itself because some of them were not in good shape. They had been cut and re-spliced together to make new cartoons. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they had taken these prints, and sometimes the actual prints from Paramount, and put them together as best they could into their original format, sometimes even including the Paramount logos before and after. Hmm. Yeah, and that show is still shown on Boomerang, Cartoon Network's sister network. So the Popeye cartoons are still being shown. They made a handful of, quote, new Popeye cartoons. There was one back in the 80s. None of them really took off as popular as the old ones. The original voice of Popeye was William Costello, but others, including Maurice LaMarche and Billy West, have voiced Popeye. So that's pretty...
It's not a hard voice to be able to mimic later.
It's not, but at the same time, it's easy to screw up and go, that's not Popeye.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that too.
Yeah.
It's like it's easy to do Elvis until it's not.
Until, yeah, exactly. I would not be doing my duty if I didn't discuss the 1980 live-action film starring Robin Williams.
Ah, yes.
Now,
I am what I am, and that's what I am.
Now, I've seen this.
Of course, then there's old Bluto song, I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not until
the end when he actually eats the spinach.
It's
a great big friggin' forearm.
It is by no means the greatest cinematic masterpiece in the world.
It's a musical. It's supposed to be silly.
Exactly. It was panned by critics.
Rightfully so.
However, technically it was a success because it earned double its budget at the box office.
I would also agree with that.
Yeah. So technically it was a success, yet everybody, quote, hates it.
Oh, no. I enjoy watching it.
I did. I enjoyed
Shelley
it, too.
Shelley Duvall is a dream.
I'm not a huge fan of Shelley Duvall, but that was the one role. She's like, yeah, that's good. I'm good with her in that role. So my very, very, very quick review of Popeye, the movie from 1980, see it with friends.
Yep.
Yeah.
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 In 2002, Sony announced it was developing a 3D animated film, not a 3D film, but an animated film, CGI film. And it was reported that Genndy Tartakovsky was going to be directing it. You know, mm-hmm. he was the head of it. By 2015, Tartakovsky said that he was no longer attached to this project. Despite, you know, good animation tests, he was moving on to other things. Sony still insists that the project is moving forward, and they've, you know, but nothing has been done. It's kind of languishing in development hell. Nobody's really willing to give up the ghost on it, yet it's not moving forward. Speaking of movies, 1988's Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Popeye and gang were visibly absent from the movie. They were not. I mean, you had everyone else except Popeye and Olive and Bluto and everything. There's a reason for that. Since the Popeye cartoons were based on a comic strip, Disney would have had to pay rights to King Features, who owned the comic strip, and MGM, who owned the rights to the cartoons at the time. However, MGM's library pre-1985, which consisted of Popeye, was purchased by Turner Entertainment, which also meant they would have had to pay royalties to them as well, which just made it a massive logistical and legal nightmare. But Popeye and gang did have a planned cameo in the movie. They weren't just going to be at the end show up. There was they had it in the storyboards that Popeye had a specific part. For his 75th anniversary, the Enterprise, I already watched Star Trek, y'all. The Empire State Building lit up green for spinach. And over the weekend of January 16th through 18th in 2004. And it is the only time the building has honored the anniversary of a comic strip character. They've honored other things. That's the only time it's been for a comic strip character. Hmm. So that, in a nutshell, is Popeye. Something decent and wholesome as opposed to my last long box. May we never speak of it again.
Oh, you mean the one where we talk about and then there was... Did you get that link? I sent you.
That's it for the comic section, ladies and gentlemen. Be sure and find us if obviously you know where to find us, but be sure to tell all your friends. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and you could just say if you own an Apple Echo, an Amazon Echo, hey Alexa, play the Geek Cave podcast. So. If there's no other news, gentlemen, I say we call an end to this fiasco.
Hear, hear.
Okay. That's it.
Bully.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Tune in to the gaming, download the gaming and movie segments, and we'll see you there.
Bye.